The Old Testament lesson for today is from 1 Kings, chapter 19, verses 1 through 8. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a message to Elijah saying, "So, may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid, and he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, else the journey will be too great for you." And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. The New Testament lesson will be from Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. He went out again beside the sea, and all the crowd gathered about him, and he taught them. And as he passed on, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. And as he sat at table in his house, many tax collectors and sinners were sitting with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many that followed him. And the scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, said to his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" And when Jesus heard it, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Dennis. Very well read. Thank you. Levi's house is this collection of miscreants, we might say. But I think there's more to it than this. You see, Jesus goes walking along, and there's this crowd of desperate people who follow him. And they get healed, they get fed, they get taught. And then Jesus is going to another part, and he passes what the scriptures call the tax office. You know what this place is like, don't you? Have you ever been to the Secretary of State and waited in line for about an hour to get a sticker on your license plate? The tax office. This isn't a place that's full of desperately poor people. It's also not a place frequented by the Pharisees or the temple elite, the Sadducees, the scribes. The Roman cohort doesn't go there except to pick up the money. You know, Romans, they're the Brinks of their day. You know, they go to the tax office to pick up their stuff. Well, what's this tax office, and what is Levi, and who are his friends? I think Levi's house is a place where everybody goes after work for a drink. You know, it's the place where all of the people who are on the outs gather together so that they can feel like they're on the in. And Jesus goes walking by. Here's this middle-class guy, right? The tax collector was the go-between between the Romans and the Jews. And the Romans collected taxes from all of the peoples they had conquered and shipped them to Rome. And the tax office was the place where people brought their taxes, and often the tax collectors would ask for a little more than was required, That's how they made their money. That's how they got their cut. And they didn't go to synagogue on Saturday. And they didn't buy the turtle doves to make the sacrifices at the temple. And they didn't offer grain offerings. And they didn't offer a sacrificial sin offering once a year. They were really just cultural Israelites, you might say. And they weren't very much liked. They extorted from the poor. They didn't follow the rules set by the rich. They were in no man's land culturally and socially. And so Levi's house, I think, is this place where all of the middle class folks who don't really fit in anywhere and can't really remember what the meaning of their life is. Each day is just some kind of drudgery. But they do it because they get a paycheck. They do it because it keeps them out of trouble. They do it because it gets them a roof over their heads and enough to eat and a mule to ride. Levi's house. Levi's house. Why is Jesus going there? I think it's interesting to find out that Jesus always takes notice of the people that nobody else wants to bother with. Whether that is the poor out in a cornfield, teaching and preaching and healing and casting out demons, whether that's giving religious instruction in the synagogue on a Saturday, or whether it's the nobody at the tax office, the guy who punches his ticket and goes home. And I think there's this really fun turn of events here in our story. Jesus says to Levi, follow me, but he doesn't tell him where he's going, right? But he says, follow me, and Levi says, this is Jesus of Nazareth, the famous guy. He's talking to me? Well, I guess maybe I'll go see what he wants. Okay, Bob, you man the shop. You man the tax office for a minute. I got to go see what this Jesus guy is up to. Well, they get farther and farther from the tax office, and Levi's sort of getting a little nervous. I got to get back to work. And a little bit farther down the road, Levi thinks, where are we going? And then they turn off the main drag, and they go past the red barn and take the third left, and Levi says, well, this is my house. What are we doing here? And Jesus said, you made dinner today, right? You ordered a lamb and some vegetables and maybe some root vegetables and some potatoes and stuff. Well, yeah. We always gather here after work, says Levi. Well, you got out a fresh skin of wine, didn't you? And you ordered some bread to be made fresh, didn't you? Well, yeah. We always gather here after work. I'm coming to your house today. And a ways back, the disciples are sort of following these two, letting them have a little bit of room to talk. And they don't get it. And the Pharisees ask them, where's Jesus? And they say, well, he went to Levi's house. They say, Levi's house? Doesn't he know that Alpheus was a no good, low down collaborator with the Romans and his son is no better? Yeah, I think he knows that. Why would he eat with these people? Why would he do this? We would have invited him for dinner. So the disciples go on in, and here comes the riffraff from around town, right? All the drunks and all the kind of middle men and people that nobody likes and people that really are overlooked in society and struggle to figure out what the meaning in their life is. And they all come in, they sit down around dinner, and everybody gets a glass of wine and a hunk of bread and a piece of lamb and maybe a bowl of vegetables. And they all sit down and start talking. And Jesus is just one of the gang. But pretty soon, somebody overhears this conversation he's having with Levi. And the room gradually gets quieter and quieter and quieter until Jesus is the only one speaking. And then he comes and he says, look, folks, nobody likes you. But I'm here to tell you that I am the bread of the world and I love you. I'm here to tell you that there's no There's nothing you can do to pay back all the wrong you've done. But this is my blood, and it's enough for you. My grace is enough for you. No matter what you've done, it's enough for you. And then Jesus does this really strange thing at Levi's house. He takes that loaf of bread, and he gives thanks to God. Baruch ata Adonai Melech Olam. And he breaks it. He shares it. There's a hush. We've got a similar character in our Old Testament lesson today as to these middlemen. Elijah's having a terrible time. It's almost inconceivable the scrape he's in, because right before this in the story of the book of Kings, there's been this contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Now there's one prophet of Israel, Elijah, and 400 prophets of Baal. And they have this contest to see who God really is. And so they say, fine, we will sacrifice a bull and put it on the altar, and we'll pray to our gods, and whoever's God is actually real and actually God, that will send fire and it'll consume the altar. Well, the prophets of Baal go on and on for hours and hours and hours. They do their rituals, and they say their prophetic words, and they get more and more agitated, and they dance, and they sing, and they make music, and then nothing happens, and they get more and more and more agitated, and they begin to cut themselves with knives, and it's this horrid scene. And then finally they get done, and Elijah says, are you guys done? And in this triumphant, magnificent, unbelievable act of faith, Elijah says, I call upon the name of the Lord, and there's this lightning bolt. And it says that not just the ox, but the stone, the water, the oil, the wood, all of it's gone. And then he says to the people, the Lord is God, which is actually what his name means. Eliyah, Elijah. El is the Hebrew word for God. E is a conjunction. Yah is the first letter in the divine name. Yahweh. Eliyah. The Lord is God. He pronounces his name, and the people rise up, and they slaughter the prophets of Baal, because they've been extorting from them all kinds of stuff, and they've corrupted them with idolatry. Well, problem is that Ahab and Jezebel sanctioned all of this, and so it's a condemnation of the royal house. And Jezebel says, as we heard Dennis read, I'm going to do just the same thing to you that you've done to my priests and my prophets. And after this amazing display of faith and this amazing display of God's power, what does Elijah do? He runs away into the bush. He fears for his own life. He turns away from God. He makes an idol out of his own fear for himself. And he needs to be redeemed from it. Now this God that showed the divine power doesn't leave Elijah to his own devices. Doesn't sneer at him because he's a weak person and is afraid for his life. After a nice nap under the broom tree, the angel comes and says, Elijah, Elijah, wake up. I made you a cake. Here's a jar of water. I even boiled the water, safe to drink. Elijah wakes up kind of in a daze, and looks around, who is speaking to me? I don't know. But there's this cake, and he's ravenous. So he eats the cake. And he drinks the jar, and then he remembers the calamity of his life that he's in, and he falls asleep again in a stupor. And then the angel comes again and says, Elijah, wake up. Wake up, Elijah. I made you a cake. There's a jar of water. So Elijah wakes up, and this time the angel's still there. The angel says, "Eat this food. You need it for the journey. Drink this water, or else you won't make it. Here's the food for the journey. Here's the cleansing cup that overcomes all our fear, all our self-doubt, all our wounds, all our brokenness, and yes, all of our sin. All of our sin and woundedness and brokenness is overcome." And we see that the greatest characters in the Bible are getting it wrong as much as they're getting it right. And that it's God's grace that makes the difference. It's God's refusal to let us go that makes the difference. Each of us here gathered is God's special possession. And God refuses to let you go. So no matter what it is that's broken in your life, no matter what it is you're running away from, no matter how mundane you think your existence might be, your life is the treasured possession of the divine Creator. And here's his body, and here's his blood. Amen.